Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009 when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
All right, we're live here on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. We apologize for the short intro. For some reason or another, my computer is acting up here, but hopefully I'm on the air, and hopefully we are broadcasting live here on Blog Talk Radio, because we have a really, really special show here today. Going any further, let's introduce our co-host for the evening, Christopher Allen Driscoll. Christopher, can you hear me?
Hi, Bob. Good to be on with you.
Good. Okay. Just on a technical note, am I breaking up at all, or am I clear at this point?
Loud and clear, Bob.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. All right. Yeah, we have a kind of a special show here. We have a special guest that was kind of introduced to us by Terry, and I want to bring on Terry, who's supposed to be calling in anytime soon to kind of introduce our guest here for the evening, because, as you know, Christopher, we just had the People's March in People's Climate March in New York City, which supposedly drew hundreds of thousands of people. And
yeah, I've heard it was quite large.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, with anything, there always is a scoop. There always is, you know, connections to the people that marched and the groups that marched and so on and so forth. And I kind of want to get into that. Corey Morningstar is going to be our special guest here on Carson's Corner, and she's an investigative reporter and environmentalist, and she has some interesting reporting as it pertains to the march here. So let's introduce the program now. Terry Lee. Terry, welcome to Carson's Corner.
How's your Bob? Nice to meet with you.
Great, great, great. And also Christopher is on the line now.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Terry.
We have a great show for you. Also have Thomas on, who we're going to introduce to the show. And, of course, we've got Corey, who I believe is called in. But, Terry, briefly, why don't you tell us how this all came about, how we got Corey on the program, and sort of, you know, kind of point people, like, as far as what we're going to be discussing here today.
Sure. So, as we know, Bob, we've seen these kind of gatherings, large demonstrations before, and this latest one that got billed as this largest climate march ever, you know, has been getting a lot of the headlines in the left. And I came across this wonderful article in Counterpunch by Arun Gupta, how the People's Climate March became a corporate PR campaign. And he really laid it out so well. And the opening line is terrific. It says, I've never been to a protest march that advertised to the New York City subway. And he's talked about the money involved and this kind of thing. And then about in the first third of the article, he writes, let's see if I can find the right starting point. There is no sense of history. Decades of climate justice activism are being erased by the incessant invocation of the biggest climate change demonstration ever, in quotes. Investigative reporter Corey Morningstar has connected the dots between the organizing group 350.org and Avaaz, the global online activist outfit modeled on MoveOn, and institutions like the World Bank and the Clinton Global Initiative. Morningstar claimed the secret of Avaaz's success is its expertise in behavioral change. And then throughout the day on Facebook, a friend suggested that I friend Corey Morningstar, and I did that. And just in casual conversation on a thread and a comment, I asked would she be willing to come on as a guest, and she said yes. And I just looked at some of her her work, and I thought she'd be really fine since a lot of the discussion today was on this climate march in New York.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Without further ado, let's welcome Corey to the program. We also have Thomas Baldwin, who's a member of the Election Boycott Advocates Group and who was on the program last week. So we're going to introduce Corey first. We're going to welcome Thomas to the program. Corey, welcome to Carson's Corner.
Hi, this is Corey.
Thank you for calling.
Hi, Corey.
How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm good, thanks.
Good. I'm sure you heard before we get into everything, let's welcome Thomas to the program. Thomas, welcome to Carson's Corner.
Hi, Bob.
Good to be here,
and it's going to be good to hear Corey. I looked at the article that Terry sent me today, a couple of ones, one in Counterpunch, and then also her blog site, which is very detailed on the investigative reporting she's been doing, and I haven't read it carefully yet, but I intend to do that. It just looks like it's a very thorough investigation of kind of connecting the dots of some of the money. And I just talked to a friend in New York City who was at the march, a good blogging friend of mine, Jill Dalton, and I got a direct report from her too. So,
well, I figure what we'll do is we'll start with Corey, kind of get a feel for her reporting, and then we'll just kind of go from there. Terry, I know that you're not going to be with us for the whole hour. You have to leave at some point, so just let us know whenever that is.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, great. So, Corey, yeah, just kind of tell us, what you gathered here with regards to the march here, and just kind of fill the audience in with regards to some of your reporting.
Well, I'm not sure even where to begin. I mean, I've been researching this stuff now for years and writing about it. I guess today, this climate march, actually, Avaaz is not just modeled on MoveOn. MoveOn is actually one of the founders of Avaaz. So that's important to know because MoveOn, I mean, I'm Canadian, but I know that MoveOn is like a front party for the Democrats.
Exactly.
Basically, this thing that we're seeing today is a spectacle. I mean, it's beyond madness. I've never really seen anything like it. We've reached, you know, what can I say? We've reached a point of peak madness. And I was in Copenhagen back in 2009. And what happened at that time, it's sort of the same thing now, but I'll tell you in a second why it's different. At that time, the UN hired an agency called Havas, and it's the biggest advertising agency in the world. And they created the Tick, Tick, Tick campaign. And basically, that was a campaign. They brought in all the industry. But in that campaign, industry was sort of hidden behind the campaign. And the first two NGOs to sign on were, again, Avaaz and 350. And so what happened in Copenhagen when you had small states like Bolivia demanding we don't exceed 1 degree and you had the G77 demanding radical emission cuts that we needed. You had this nonprofit industrial complex led by Tick, 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 Avaaz, Greenpeace, all the other ones, I think about 270 all combined, demanding 2 degrees, a full double, right? And if you look back in documents at the beginning of the 1990s, Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth at that time were citing we can't go further than 1 degree. Here we are, you know, every ecosystem's collapsing and we're quote-unquote demanding two. I mean, it's crazy. And so, but even at Copenhagen, I think we had about 100,000 people in the streets, and it was, you know, very much contained, as this one is, by all the NGOs and the nonprofit industrial complex. But the difference today is you see, in broad daylight, the corporations and the people and the, you know, so-called left, the left establishment, and even the real left, all together, all united.
Yeah.
You know, and it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
It is insane. Corey, this is Chris Driscoll. I have a question that I'd love to hear your thoughts on. I've been involved in the environmental movement, anti-war movement, movements for social and economic justice for about 45 years. And never in my memory, in all the big demonstrations that I've been to, and I lived in D.C. for about 20 years, so I've been to a lot of them, I don't ever remember having corporate sponsors to any kind of radical left demonstration of sort.
Yeah, I mean,
and
this thing,
that's what jumps right out at you. Could you talk about the kinds of big corporations that are involved in as sponsors of this march today?
Okay, well, first of all, this is anything but any kind of radical event, right? That's the first thing. This isn't the People's March. This is the oligarchs' march.
Exactly.
I mean, this belongs to the establishment. It's bought and paid for. So,
yes.
You know, the first thing, that's fraud. I mean, this has nothing to do with the people. It's like the Ku Klux Klan marching with the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, this is crazy. And before, what we have today, the NGOs love saying, we don't take corporate money. We don't take corporate money. Well, they don't have to, because what we have now is corporations funneling money through their foundations.
Yeah.
Into the NGOs.
Mm-hmm. Corey, your example of the KKK marching with the civil rights movement, which hit a point, if that was so, the civil rights movement would know that they're marching with the KKK. In this instance, it doesn't seem that the people are aware that they're marching with the KKK, the corporation. They seem oblivious to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you're saying now is social engineering, and I mean, they're brilliant at it. If you look in my article, there's a video, and I mean, I have to watch a lot of lectures to find stuff like this. There's Jeremy Hymans, and he's one of the Avaaz co-founders, and I'm not sure how much time you've had to look into it, but another co-founder is Tom Perriello, ex-congressman, who's, you know, very pro-war in all his votes when he was serving as a congressman, as a Democrat. Anyway,
not surprising for a Democrat.
Yeah. I just lost my train of thought. What were we just talking, saying? You asked me what was the question?
Oh, I was saying that in the example of KKK, that the people seem a little innocent. They don't seem to realize that they're marching with the enemy, and you're pointing out the background in that, I believe.
Yeah, it's sort of hard to believe because, I mean, today you've got, what's her name? You've got one of the... I mean, I'm Canadian, so I'm not as familiar with all your sort of eco-celebrities, but you've got one of your more well-known left celebrities marching with the president of Unilever today.
Mm.
You've got World Bank, the vice president of World Bank. Where is it? I could send you a screenshot. You've got World Bank vice presidents marching here. I mean, it's over the top. You've got Purpose, which is Avaaz. Same co-founders, has a campaign called Walk the Walk, and it's over the top stupid. It's even Hop the Hop, walk like a penguin, walk in your you know, this is insane. People are dying all over the planet. I mean, you know, indigenous peoples are being annihilated, and we're going to, you know, do hopscotch for climate change. And then you've got President Obama himself using that hashtag today. You know, what does that say? How does that, you know, why is he using a hashtag? You've got the UN promoting this hashtag, you know, the Avaaz Purpose campaign. And it's basically, you know, stay stupefied, stay dumb, you know, stay dumbed down. We're doing nothing. You've got Hyman's that video that I was telling you about a few minutes ago. In the video talking, saying the green economy is, you know, it's not doing what we want it to do. And by the way, the green economy is a delusion. We need to get it going. We need to jumpstart it, ignite it. So what we're going to do, we're going to build the green economy, but we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to use the term. We're going to build it without telling people we're building it. I mean, it's all, you know, sophisticated marketing and social engineering, and it's behavioral change. And to see this happen today is incredible, how people have been roped in.
Is it safe to say that this effort has been co-opted at this point? I mean, without these individuals knowing, I mean, you've got, by some accounts, several hundreds of thousands of people. You had Senator Sanders I believe Sheldon, Sheldon Whitehouse, I believe, marching, and this is presented to us as the real alternative, the environmental movement and you know, grassroots and this and that. But, you know, thanks to your reporting, Corey, you look and you connect the dots between the world polluters and these organizations. And so therefore, you know, to me, it's almost invalid at this point.
It can't be co-opted because it never belonged to the people in the first place.
Yes. That's a good point.
I was saying that earlier. It wasn't co-opted. We talk about co-opted as infiltrated, but this is from the start. It belonged to them.
No, this is something totally, totally different. You know, this is a very, very expensive propaganda exercise. You know, and what it shows today, Avaaz 350 has said to their funders, look what we can do. Look at our power, right? And so that's the danger. I mean, the left went along with it and said, well, you know, we're going to go. I mean, even, you know, a lot of people I know would argue with me and say, oh, well, we have to go anyway. You know, we have to go. But every person there empowers 350 and Avaaz.
Yes. Is showing up.
And Unilever and Lockheed Martin.
it's unbelievable what they've got us to do. I mean, what do you think is the anecdote to this? What's the answer to this? An educated population?
Yeah.
Should our response be on the radical left? What should we do?
Well, I mean, I think it should have went a lot different than this. For instance, people keep saying, well, you know, we have to work together in that. But the establishment left is not on our side.
Yes.
They're undermining us. They're the enemy. You know, first thing we have to know, what did Malcolm X say? Do not march with your oppressor.
Uh-huh.
Right.
You know, you look back and you look at, you know, the Black Panthers, Malcolm X, Stokely Carmichael. I mean, they would be disgusted with this.
Uh-huh.
They would be. Terry actually found a great article from Malcolm X talking about the big march, civil rights march in 1963, where Malcolm X was basically saying about that what you're saying about this now.
Don't march with your oppressors.
Yes.
Yeah, and what we find is this left that Corey was referring to. It's the Democratic Party left, quote left unquote. You know, so. You know, that's part of the game is suck people into the Democratic Party, attract people into this plutocratic, imperialist, pro-war party that has, ever since it's been in power, since 2008, has had war after war. How good as war for the environment. Not too
well,
good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And how is it that Obama just announced yet another war, and today we're partying in the streets? I mean, that makes me sick, you know?
Thomas,
well, actually,
I want to bring Terry, go, but I want to bring in Thomas to discussion. Also, we have a caller from the Iowa area that I want to get on to in a little while, so.
That's Toppy David.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Yeah, Thomas, did you have anything, because you've been kind of silent here. Did you have anything you want to add to this? And then after that, we'll bring on David to the show.
Well, I just think Corey has done a really good service by writing the article that she wrote that should help open our eyes. I, as to the dynamics of how this thing actually was assembled, they're a little unclear to me. I mean, McKibben at 350 Org, you know, was obviously getting very frustrated that he couldn't gather large crowds, and so, you know, he was very instrumental in helping to organize this in the first place. And I think what happened, I can't say this for sure, but Corey might be able to elaborate on it. Seems to me that these two marketing geniuses, if I can call them that, really decided that they would help the organizations that are involved, and especially maybe 350 Org and whoever else, to raise money, and that they have their ideas about what she calls social engineering, but how to use social movements, essentially through the use of nonprofits, corporations, nonprofit foundations, and so forth, to funnel money into the system with the stated objective, at least. I mean, we know what the real objective was, but with the stated objective is that they could really put them on the map and use their marketing expertise to do this. I mean, you know, this almost goes back to what was the guy's name that invented marketing and public relations back in the 1900s?
Edwin Bernays, yeah.
Bernays.
Yeah, Edwin Bernays. It's almost like they're textbook examples of what you recommended, and they've now decided to apply this to social movements and essentially to raise money for social movements, with the real intent is they're going to enrich themselves in the process. You know, they're going to show that they're necessary components to organize things like this. And so the co-option is really, I mean, I think it's somewhat complex, although I think she's done a good job of digging a lot of it out. But it seems to me that the Democrats wanted to be involved because they needed a political issue. I mean, they know that they're in trouble for fall in order to maintain their power in the Senate in particular. And so we've got those senators out there marching, and, you know.
I would say they wanted, it also helped that this was a non-economic issue. They get away with a lot because Occupy Wall Street showed the economic disparity, the wealth gap, and this didn't do that, so the politicians can show up for this because it really doesn't threaten them so much.
Right,
at all.
Exactly. Exactly.
Does that make sense to you, Corey?
Yeah, I mean, the social movements don't really have to raise money from the public or anything. I mean, they're funded by the millions. It's a billion-dollar industry, the nonprofit industrial complex, and there's just massive amounts of money being funneled from corporate power into these NGOs. So money for them is not an issue. I mean, Rockefeller is one of the main funders of 350.org, not just a funder. It was an incubator project of the Rockefellers when it was on One Sky, and then there was One Sky and there was 350, and then back in 2011 they merged together. One Sky was the incubator project of Rockefeller, as is the Climate Group. That's also an incubator project of the Rockefeller Foundation. So it's, there's a lot of dots to connect, but at the end of the day, this is like a collaboration between 350.org of Oz, and of Oz being the one with the social engineering expertise, purpose, which is the VAS, and United Nations.
And it works. It works, and they really poofed around today. They show it works. And the people who went said, oh, we had a very meaningful march. And all the mainstream media, the corporate media saying, the size. All you hear about is the size, the biggest march ever, record numbers. That's what they focus on. And I think people, individuals who participated, come back and kind of feel good. They were there. They were part of something. And they have no idea about
it. Yeah, no one asked what was accomplished. Nothing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, all the politicians looked great.
This is brilliant.
You look at the sorry, Bob, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say, you look at the fix that Obama is in right now, the last 2 years of his presidency. He has a horrendous environmental record. He scuttled the last UN conference on the climate change issue, literally just scuttled it. Stabbed a knife in it. So that's the record up to now that people are looking at. Hey, this is the Democrats that say they're for good stewardship of the earth. I don't think so. You know. And so what can the Democratic Party do 1.5 months before the midterm elections put a pink green paintbrush to their tarnished record, and this
very
is
good
it.
Point. With that, I want to welcome David Arthur Smithers to the program. David, welcome to Carson's Corner.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you folks for introducing me to Corey. I never heard of her before today, so we have a common interest in indigenous rights, I see you too. And I think this is kind of remarkable. This is the month that the United Nations is supposed to be looking at the so-called fourth world.
Right, what are you not hearing about?
Well, it's that, of course, it's the United Nations is hardly the forum for, well, it's not a very reputable forum for hearing of those rights, and it's going to be, you know, they're not going to be first-hand representative, of course.
Yeah.
And, of course, this is very much about the crisis of capitalism and that, the indigenous and tribal peoples of the world are being, continuously assaulted by the corporate world and the primitive accumulation of capital and the pursuit of declining profit margins. And just this week, in The Economist, it says that the developing world has ceased its convergence with the developed world as far as growing convergence as far as rate of growth. So now the capitalist world can't even say that the rest of the world isn't catching up with the United States and Europe and Japan, except for China is catching up somewhat. But it used to be that the developing world would catch up with us in 30 years. Well, now it's going to be somewhere between 150 years and 300 years. So it's almost never. So capitalism doesn't work. So what's being diverted by things like this is the fact that capitalism doesn't work. So we have wars and things like, climate marches and the so-called green economy, which is basically nothing but a top-down 1% elitist project.
Yeah.
So that's,
and this whole march is about protecting capital. I mean, that's what it all comes down to.
Right. Well, I would be willing to bet that there was some sort of effort to get people to register to vote or some sort of way to basically, get people involved with the election process, which, of course, we the election boycott advocates reject the election process at this point. But since there are so many people wired into the electoral system, it wouldn't be surprised, because these events, as you've been noting, Corey, and others, are used to basically perpetuate the system.
Yeah, absolutely.
Corey, I know you're not familiar with the election boycott app. We just bumped in today, but can you tell us what was your initial reaction when you heard of this concept, this idea, election boycott advocates?
I don't believe in elections.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm good with that. Corey's one of us.
you're one of us.
But I think
We've run into other Canadians who are carrying out election boycotts there. So right. seems to be an idea that's catching on in Canada as well as the United States. Given that both so-called democracies are really run by the 1%, really run by the billionaire class, the capitalists, here we have one of the biggest social movements in modern times, the environmental movement, being sucked in by this same 1% force,
begging your oppressors to listen.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, they don't care about us, and they never will. They're not going to fix climate change. I mean, someone said they're not going to fix anything, you know, and someone said to me, well, would you rather 50,000 people show up or 200 or 300,000? And I said, I'd rather 200 to 300,000 people stay home this weekend with their family and plant it and turn their lawns into great big gardens,
right.
You know, great
exactly.
big food gardens. I mean, this is so... such a waste of time and energy and fossil fuels and everything. I mean, it's
yes.
just over the top madness.
And really, this frustration that people run into in so-called democracies like Canada, like the United States, that are really run by the oligarchy. This is why we're pushing this idea of. Turn our backs on this phony election system and look towards building a real alternative democracy that can really make this kind of change to save this world that's being destroyed at this moment.
Well, I have a question for you guys. Turn the table around. I was thinking today when I was, you know, just going through some thoughts in my head about all this and this march and everything, and I was thinking about income taxes, and I'm not sure if you have to pay as much as we do in Canada, but it's massive, the income tax that we pay. And, I mean, they were implemented during the war, and then afterwards, you know, I guess people kept paying them because schools and hospitals and fire departments and stuff like that. But now, as everything's being privatized, why are we paying income tax to bomb other people? You
because
know, like,
the way they privatize is they privatize it and then they subsidize it with our tax
right.
dollars. That's what they
but
want.
I mean,
that's what
a
they've
real
done
campaign.
With our. That's what
Go
they've
ahead.
Done with Obamacare. They've forced us to buy private health insurance, and then the government is giving these same filthy private enterprise insurance corporations billions of dollars in subsidies. And also, I'd like to mention, I've looked at the compared taxes in Canada and the United States, and they're actually higher for working people in the United States because the United States has this enormous military fund all over the world, which of course Canada has quite a bit smaller military, and of course Canadian military is so integrally integrated into the American military command structure. It's just, I mean, were I to be a Canadian, I would be through the roof with anger over how much of a kind of a supportive role the Canadian military plays towards the big U.S. worldwide military with more than 1,000 military and espionage bases, American bases on foreign soil. So, yeah, I mean, we have this tax problem, too, and there are some of the election boycott advocates who also advocate just turning our back on that whole system as well, that system
you know,
of funding. Pardon me?
No, I was just going to add, Corey makes a good point about the privatization here in the United States.
Yeah.
Which privatization has been presented to the American public as an alternative, and it's largely worked because, you know, the for-profit Wall Street, the ideological imperatives of these corporations entail privatization. But what happens here in the United States is that if you compare our taxation system to the taxation system in Europe, where Europe may have a slightly higher tax rate, but when you factor in what we pay in gas, when you factor what we pay in education, healthcare, we're paying more of our income to these corporations than our European counterparts are. And I think that's the consequence of privatization. And our tax code, you want to talk about our tax code. The tax code in the United States is swelled to over 70,000 pages because it's written for and by the very wealthy. And surprise, when you give the very wealthy such power, they write a tax code, which is essentially an open-ended entitlement to the ruling class.
Right. But, I mean, that's what we should be working towards, like how to starve the system, right? And instead we're dancing in the streets with our oppressors.
Yeah. The corporate media, of course, has a big role in this. People don't know. They don't know. They think they're doing something that's useful or meaningful. They don't know. It's innocent, you know.
Another important thing is to Purpose, which is, like I've already said, Avaaz, co-founders. They're promoting a new campaign called With Syria. It's fairly new, March of this year. And I see it starting to get more traction now as the, you know, U.S. basically really would like to have acquiescence from the public to go in and start bombing Syria. And it's a real hate campaign, you know, and I encourage people to take a look at what I've put together on that because... I mean, these are people that, you know, just like us with kids and family and everything else. And, you know, Avaaz is up to their neck in blood after how them, not just them, but about 70 NGOs, including Avaaz, built public acquiescence and support for the bombing of Libya, which was a beautiful country before, and now it's in utter chaos. You know, it's completely destroyed. And, you know, these are dangerous.
How could the public go after Avaaz?
Go after them?
Yeah.
Well, I think that Avaaz, and there's other ones too, that like key ones in Europe, especially in the case of Libya, that really opened up the opportunity for the airstrikes, which is obviously just bombing a people, but. You know, I don't know. You need a lawyer. You need to go after some of these things for crimes against humanity. I mean, what is it when you know that there's hundreds of thousands of people dying from climate change and you have NGOs go in and undermine Bolivia by full degree and just make them invisible, you know? And what is that if not crimes against humanity?
Right.
Who's responsible? I mean, who's responsible for that?
Well, you know, you raise a good point. My question is, and you know, maybe we can get Thomas in on this, is where at this point, what is the opposition to this? I mean, you know, we see the march in New York City. We see all these organizations and these groups, and this gets presented to the American public as the left, the climate groups, and whatnot, and so. Where are people? Are there enough people out there like us that are looking at this as the spectacle that it is, or do you feel that people are just going along with this show?
Is that a question for me?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, I'll let everybody else add what they want to add. I just want to say this is the first time that I've seen this many people all of a sudden waking up and accepting. And believing what's going on.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I've seen, well, there was the article from Arun Gupta on Counterpunch. There was your article, Corey. There was an article from Chris Hedges.
Yes.
So it appears, at least, that some of our left tribunes, so to speak, some of our voices who have a wide reach on the left have noticed this and spoken about it. Corey, you write for Grist, is that true?
No, nothing to do with them. I write for just Counterpunch, and wrong kind of greed.
Okay, counterpunch.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's wrong.
Counterpunch. You know, which has a because it was it has a pretty wide audience. Chris Hedges, I know, has a pretty wide audience, and of course Arun Gupta has built up a pretty good audience. So it does appear that people are seeing this kind of greenwashing, this kind of corporate takeover and funneling of the green movement into a safe zone in the Democrat Party. People are waking up to it. I have to agree with you.
I have a question for the group. There's also another event tomorrow that I'm less familiar with. It's called Flood Wall Street, and it's taking place tomorrow. Does anyone know if that one has a little more meat to it or anything more about the Flood Wall Street? Is that victimized in the same way? It's taking place tomorrow.
Well, I know some people have some high hopes for that, but I also I've read about that. I read something today where it's an action. First, you have to get your training, right?
Yeah.
Your nonviolent direct action training. And
yeah.
Then you have to wear blue, and then it's the sit-in. It's going to be a sit-in. So there's a time, right? You go at 9, at 11:30, you know, you get your training, 11:30, you sit in, at 5 you go home, that type of thing. I mean, there might be, hopefully there will be, you know, anarchists and Black Bloc and different, you know, groups of people that will, you know, indigenous groups that will maybe raise some hell, but I'm not sure how that's going to go.
My impression is, and this is more speculation than anything else, because I have read the details of it, but my impression is it's a more independent movement considerably than the climate march. And I'm guessing, I'm not sure, and I suspect that's probably why they propose training, is going to be a more militant group. And the fact that they're confronting Wall Street, you know, is kind of brings back memories of Occupy Wall Street. And so I think they're anticipating there are going to be arrests with that. But we'll see. I mean, we just have to wait and see because, you know, I would imagine that there would be a number of people from the march who stay over for that. And, you know, if they're from out of town in particular, maybe those in town too, but that there'll be the more militant group tomorrow that will confront directly, you know, the corporate financiers. And so I would imagine that they'll be out in full force in the New York police tomorrow and be watching this situation carefully to see how it goes.
But, I mean, what good is it when everyone goes to something and you sit in the street and at 5 you get up and go home? Like, who could care less?
Right.
Think, you know,
right.
Really, you think Wall Street could care less?
Well,
they'll be out there taking
that's
pictures.
Hopefully, you know, an effort like this, they would come to the realization and support us in the sense that there's no point of the first step, I think, is to boycott the elections, is to say, okay, wait a minute, you know, we can't get involved with political parties, we have to reject the system, and then from there, you know, as we've been saying, kind of create an alternative. But I see what you're saying, though. It's if they don't engage in you know, take the right steps afterwards, it's all, you know, the system will essentially marginalize such efforts.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I said, Corey, about the election boycott movement or advocacy is that it's you can't be co-opted. You know, we won't go into the voting booth. We won't go to the polls. So there's no way for them to co-opt us. And I find that's one of our strengths.
Right.
I disagree.
Hmm. One thing I haven't mentioned is that I have someone that wrote to me, and they were approached, a young group of youth that were in a environmental type of forum not too long ago, and they were approached by Greenpeace, who's, you know, very closely tied to 350.org and of Oz, and they were actually paid to go to New York City, not paid money directly in their pocket, but everything was paid for. The buses were paid for. The lodging was paid for. The food's paid for. And apparently they've done this with at least 350 busloads of people. So what you have, that's called a junket. I mean, what, you know, what young kid is not going to want to go to New York City for the weekend for free?
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Corey, the one aspect we haven't discussed yet is this UN meeting that big demonstration was supposedly to influence. Can you say a few words about that? What it's about and what are the prospects?
Well, that's there? Just a bunch of bullshit. I mean, the UN's behind this whole march. They plan to do what they plan to do back in 2009, 2010, nothing. I mean, you can see what UN does for countries that are being, you know, trying to resist being blown to pieces by the U.S. The UN represents the empire. You know, it's a mouthpiece of the empire.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? I wish more people on the, quote, left, unquote, would really come to that understanding about the United Nations, that it's been so pulled in by the power of U.S. imperialism that it really doesn't function in any way as it was intended to start with. It basically functions as just another arm of U.S. imperialism.
Absolutely, yeah. Another interesting thing, going back to your guest who came on and started talking about capitalism, a lot of Avaaz, WWF, which is horrible NGO, you know, founded by Rockefeller and Shell, and they, Avaaz350.org, WWF, have all been playing with the theme, the tagline from Naomi Klein's new book, This Changes Everything. They're all playing with that and using this theme, this changes everything, right? You can almost see it as if how they, 350.org, is incredible. I mean, they've done this thing where they've modified Obama's logo and they put it on everything. They put it on their posters, on their banners, and all you see in these marches is just a sea of the Obama brand.
Yeah.
Right? And so now you've got this happening with I've got a cat here and her leg just got amputated a couple of days ago. So I'm just a bit distracted right now. But basically you've got this branding, you know, this massive branding campaign of Obama. And then you've got now Klein's book. I mean, it's supposed to be anti-capitalism, but here she has aligned herself with some of the most powerful capitalists in the world. You know, Rockefellers, you know, 350 of Oz, like all the people protecting capital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, this is really, really strategic stuff.
So what's a real grassroots people's movement, people's effort supposed to do if you're outside of that nonprofit and all the big money? Like, the Election Boycott Advocate is just a group of people who want to push something forward, and we don't have funding or sponsors or these kinds of things. What would you advise to...
Well, why should we be getting paid to do what we all should do anyway?
Well, I agree, but it's so hard to push the message forward. You know what I mean? Like,
you just keep pushing. You just keep pushing and pushing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and eventually, I mean, I've been writing my stuff for years and years and years, and everyone loves it secretly, mm-hmm. right, in private. And then all of a sudden, now it's okay, you know, to start, sharing it and talking about it in public.
Yeah.
But it takes people stop. It's self-censorship. People are afraid, you know, and we've been indoctrinated to believe and obey and be passive, and this is what we get. And we're going to have to learn to break out of it, and you guys just keep doing your great work.
Well, it also takes years of persistence with people like you. I mean, you know, the amount of patience it requires is enormous. I've only been blogging for 4 years, and And, you know, I mean, I was preoccupied with other stuff. But anyway, since I kind of reached a retirement stage, I thought I'd spend time writing about the political system and how corrupt it is. And I've become more and more radical, but it's also reflected in my writing. And if people understand that you're persistent and that you're committed to it, I mean, the message does eventually get through. But it's like the problem of overcoming brainwashing is huge. You know, I mean, the Germans were expert at it, and you know, in the 30s, and they understood what it did, and essentially, that's what 1984 was about—the book, you know, about how the state gets control of the situation, and it just continues to bombard you with propaganda.
And well, so I said yesterday, this is like Brave New World in 1984 collided.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think your advice that you just got to keep being persistent and keep working at it is absolutely right on. You know, if you hope to accomplish anything, I mean, you can't just take a short stab at something and expect any change to occur, because you're talking about, you know, kind of reverse social engineering, I guess, in a way. And getting people to think for themselves.
Yeah, Go ahead.
I just wanted to point out something that Aaron Gupta said toward the end of his article. He poses a question to radicals that I could maybe throw out here for us. He says, rather than moaning on the sidelines and venting on Facebook, radicals need to be in the streets. Join the marches and, more important, the direct action. Radicals need to ask the difficult questions as to why, for the second time in 15 years, has a militant uprising, first Seattle and then Occupy, given way to liberal co-optation? What good is your radical analysis if the NGO sector and Democratic Party fronts keep out-organizing you? It's a little bit not quite a fair question, is it?
I don't know. I think his article is great. I'm glad he put it out there, and I'm glad it's getting read. I just don't really agree with that. Like I said, I don't think you should march with your oppressor. This hasn't been co-opted. It's been it belongs to the oligarchs from the moment it began. This was never a movement of the people.
Yes.
So this is a different thing than co-optation. And
that's right.
You know,
I do
well,
know.
Another aspect of Arun's comment is wrong as well, and that is he seems to be saying, hey, you know, don't talk, just act. You know, I disagree with that. I think this is a time when education is so important. I think what Corey did with her one article is a hell of a lot more important than half a million people did today in the street.
Thank you.
the pen, it can be very mighty, and we're in a period now where we've got to be out there any way possible with the truth.
That's all we have,
and
that's right.
If there are voices out here shouting out the truth, I think that's so very important right now, because, marching in the streets, although it does have an educational, as I said a couple of times, it does have an educational value at times, but marching in the streets is not going to get across to the people of this world, the people of America, the people of Canada, where Corey is. We're not going to get across unless we talk to people, unless we use the pen, we use the internet, the radio, television, any way we possibly can to get across the truth. Because there are very few voices out there that are speaking the truth.
Exactly. That's why it's important for us to create our own media, create, you know, shows like this, other shows that can have these type of discussions, because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, these people are marching, as we've said, with politicians. They're marching with individuals that do not want to change things but want to keep things the same, the way are, and that is just really, really it's depressing. But you know what? Again, we have Corey, we have others out there, and that gives me solace going forward. Is that at least we're having this discussion now, and we're not just going to go blindly march with, you know, individuals that are marching with our oppressors. We keep on going back to it, but it's so true.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, too, how important that is, that comment. There's no point in marching if you don't even have a clue what you're marching for.
Right.
You know, just pick up some books, walk away, you know, from activism
right.
and read for 3 months.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's so important.
This climate march does remind me, it does have some parallels in a way to the election boycott, in that non-participation is be the way to go. They should have made the streets empty so that his efforts didn't work. I've concluded, as I've studied the election matter, that the oligarchs just need us to simply participate. They don't matter what we do in there, but they do need our participation. They do rely on voter turnout just showing up for them. And this reminded me of that same type of thing. People showed up for them. They, you know, Bernie Sanders led the line. Harry Reid was there. It just felt terrible to see this kind of, you know, unity or, you know.
Well, I think I read today Lockheed Martin is one of the main sponsors of the climate week in New York.
You can't make this up. I mean, you can't. It's just unbelievable.
Yes, I mean, one of the major war, one of the major war manufacturers in the world, and they're going to show us the way to save the world from environmental disaster. They're causing the environmental disaster.
Well, and even like Avaaz and 350, all they do, they don't talk about consumption or any other problems. They don't talk about militarism. All they do is talk about the green energy illusion, right? Well, you know, guess what? If cars take off, the Tesla, they want to get everybody into like this, you know, Tesla or whatever, this big green car movement. Well, there goes Bolivia off the map, you know, because Bolivia has got the lithium. So this whole idea of like this green energy economy that runs on love and butterfly kisses is out to lunch.
Love and butterfly.
It really is. It really is. Instead of building mass transit to get people around, that would be so much better. They're still encouraging people to go the individual way, right?
Yeah.
I'm wondering, as we're all here together, how we can help each other with our efforts. How can we work together to sort of cross promote or help push these messages forward together? Is there a way we can sort of do that other than social media or something? How can we work together in a way?
Well, I don't have a good answer for that. I mean, I hate Facebook, and I left for months, and then I had to come back to get some information out.
Yeah.
And,
I'm glad you were there today.
But, I mean, I hate it, and, that's a really good question. I think when everything starts to fall apart, that's when people all of a sudden go out and meet their neighbors and start to really work together, because we're going to have to.
Yes.
We got about 2 minutes left here. I kind of just want to wrap it up here, maybe give everybody a closing statement here and you know, pump out any websites or anything that you think are important as we move forward here. So I guess, Corey, being the featured guest, thank you for joining us on short notice here. And, you know, just keep just say something, maybe just give people websites that you feel are relevant.
Okay, The Art of Annihilation, just how it sounds, one word, Wrong Kind of Green. Jay Tabber, a really good writer, has a website that has a whole bunch of articles right now on the climate march, and it's called A Culture of Imbeciles.
Uh-huh.
What else? Stephanie McMillan does a great blog on capitalism. Really, really great illustrator, writer. I don't know. I didn't really expect that question. I don't know what else to say. I'll give the floor to someone else.
Those were good responses. You had a good list there. I think our website, we've been working on the website, electionboycott.weebly.com.
And on there, we do have a collection of statements by about 20 or so election boycotters stating why they've joined the election boycott movement. And that's our friends here saying things. So when you can, please take a look at that, if you could.
Yes, the website, too, I think it's featured on Carson's Corner, if you can't find it. And that's electionboycott.weebly, weebly.com.
And Thomas, I know you have a website, too, in closing.
Yeah, well, it's a proactive voice, proactive activist voice. I was just thinking about the question about what we can do. I think the kind of thing that we're doing right now, I think, is very helpful because,
yes,
you know, four people have been brought together and didn't even know each other a few weeks ago. And here we are talking like we've known each other for years, you know, because we're such common minds about this situation. And so I think one of the things that we definitely need to do is to talk to each other on programs like this that Bob's been so graceful to give us access to, and then to support each other's writing and,
yep,
and to continue to give relevant references. I think that's one of the things that we benefit most from expanding our networks by learning about people like this. Like, I admit I didn't know Corey before early today, and what I've seen from what she's written, I want to study a lot more because there's a lot to be learned here.
Mm-hmm.
That's all well said. I couldn't have said any better. So we're going to basically wrap up the show. Again, I want to thank everybody out there for listening. So, Corey, thank you for joining us. Terry, and Christopher, and Thomas, it's been another great show, and I thank you all for your presence here.
Thanks very much, Bob.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care, guys.
Corey.
See you next week.